Zach Abraham, where you been, buddy?
Man, so fishing in Alaska.
Nice.
With my, yeah, it was my son's 12th birthday request. And then football season started. So, I mean, see, football season in and of itself, and people don't really understand. So they're like, don't you just coach fifth grade? So, A, for those that don't know me, I'm kind of an extremist a little bit.
In what regard?
not in the parlance of our times, extremist, but just in terms of, I don't do anything halfway.
Okay.
Drives
okay.
My, you know. And being a football to me, even at the fifth grade level, is all engrossing. And the other part of it that's all engrossing is this is like my fourth year with them. And so to watch them all grow and progress, and it's a blast. It's an absolute blast. I love the boys, and we have a great time.
Love that. That's anyways, so wholesome. Look at you, wholesome dad.
It really is. You know what? And it really, that's one of the other things I like about it is that you get done with the day. First of all, one of the things I've realized about myself is I'm not happy unless I'm serving in some capacity. You know what I mean? Like it really does my soul well. And I think it's true for everybody. And there's a lot of days where you don't feel like going to practice after work, but I always feel so much better and so glad that I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you get tired of sitting around worried about yourself and worried about your own life, it's a wonderful mental break to go give something, you know, or go serve in some capacity, you know.
I love that, especially after this crap week of sadness and depression and stuff. All just insane. But well, we missed you, but I think that's a good reason to miss the show. And in fairness, we also abandoned you to go to on our various fall vacations. So we're back. We thought it'd be a good idea to rebrand the show. We knew this day was coming. But Doge is sort of trickling out. They're still out there cutting things, contracts and stuff, but we're going to expand it to be more all-encompassing on watching your money and where it's going. So speaking of, Governor Bob Ferguson in Washington State, he's very concerned with your money, Zach. Very concerned. He's very concerned.
I know he's concerned about my money. I'm positive about that, yeah.
So he has this big press conference complaining about how Trump's tariffs are impacting real people. Here he is.
But just give you a sense of scale. If you spend $200 a week on your groceries, you'll be spending an extra $128 per month on those groceries as a result of these tariffs. We also predict a 7% spike in the cost of clothes and shoes in the next year, a 14% increase in natural gas prices, which of course push up utility bills, and an increase of 25% in the cost of used cars. No matter how much the president wants us to believe that foreign countries bear the cost of these tariffs, that's simply not true. Multiple studies make clear that the actual costs are passed on to you, consumers in Washington State.
Now, I wouldn't mind that. Look, we've both said, we can be realistic about tariffs. There's a cost benefit there. Tariffs can't increase the cost of goods. So if that was a politician who was just really, you cared a lot about expenses going up for us, I'd be all in. But he, you know, conveniently ignores the $9.5 billion in new taxes on Washingtonians that he just pushed through.
Do you remember the movie Billy Madison?
Yeah,
remember
of course.
Everybody goes, that was the dumbest thing I have ever heard. And at no point did you ever come close to making a valid, right? So if nat gas goes up 7%, it will have absolutely nothing to do with tariffs. Nothing. We are the world's largest provider of nat gas. Will nat gas prices probably go up? Yes, because we're exporting it to Europe. Okay, so A, complete garbage stat. Second of all, used cars. Virtually nothing to do with tariffs. If the cost to use car or new cars goes up a little bit, like ones that we're importing, that could have an ancillary benefit. But you know what has a much bigger impact on used cars? We just saw it. Government spending ridiculous amounts of money, of which Washington State hasn't stopped. Because look what happened to the price of used cars, right? It went through the roof, right? The other thing is, why don't we look at things that everybody has to pay? I find it extraordinarily rich in a state where, now if you think about, fuel is a wonderful way to look at inflation, right? Because if you are me, it doesn't matter what the cost of fuel is, right? If you go further down every dollar I go down the income ladder, the fuel is becoming a bigger and bigger percentage. The average cost of a gallon of fuel in this country is $2.25. We pay over $5 here in the United States or in the state of Washington, and that's all tax, right? He started talking about nat gas. If he was really concerned about nat gas, what was the push to abolish nat gas from Washington state? It's just lies and freaking nonsense. Yeah. And even if he was right, the other question is, again, it's like debating with kindergartners. And you go, listen, if your argument is that you don't like tariffs, I agree with you, but a tariff is a tax.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Why is this big T tariff better than this big T taxes, right? It's because you're an idiot and you don't understand the difference, or you're grifting. In his case, I think he's just grifting, right?
Yeah, he's smarter than that. Totally disingenuous. And I'm okay if he was coming out and he was, you know, acknowledging, like, because he's complaining. He says, oh, we did the math and I crunched the math and this is going to cost us Washingtonians $2 billion. And again, that's not insignificant if you believe his statistics, but far less than the $9.5 billion in taxes via the state's largest tax increase that you just signed. And as you pointed out, you know, what has been the single biggest contributor to the increase in the cost of gas in Washington state? The Climate Commitment Act, which 100%. He supported. He still supports to this day. If he didn't support it, he could take steps as governor to make sure that the impact wasn't as much on Washingtonians. I thought this was funny. Just it's so slimy. So there was a reporter in the room who actually asked him with the Center Square about the hypocrisy of all this, right? Like, hey, how can you complain about these costs but ignore the costs that you just imposed on Washingtonians? And he, like, froze, deflected. Here it is.
The state's GOP chairman just putting out a statement. Obviously,
this should be good. This should be good. This should be always entertaining. Yeah, what have you got?
This focus on tariffs is an attempt to distract away from the market. Do you have any response to that?
I mean, you know, what I will say is I'm someone who believes in data and actual numbers and being prepared. And so, look, if the chairman has a critique of the actual numbers, look forward to hearing that. I'm not hearing that in a statement. He's not challenging the numbers. He's not saying this isn't real. He's not saying tariffs are good for businesses. If he does, have him come on down to Boon Boon, a coffee shop. I'd invite him to come on down, right? Maybe have a conversation with the folks in our grocery stores who are actually there talking to the customers about what choices they're making in the meat they're purchasing. Maybe have those conversations. Easy to put out a press release and a statement. I get that. That's what he does. I get that. But look, as a governor and as leaders in our communities, right, we need to engage in reality, okay? And reality is what these numbers say. And look, we're going to, you know, and I think the questions go with this. We'll be taking steps through the budget process to what we can do to mitigate these harms, to anticipate loss of general fund revenues, and welcome anyone who wants to be constructive in that effort.
Sure you will.
Sure you will, yeah. Can you get any more sanctimonious? Like, what's so hard about saying, yeah, we had to make some tough decisions and costs have gone up because of our increased taxes? I mean, he's complaining about the cost of energy because of Trump, and our gas tax just went up 6 cents because they can't manage their money.
Yeah, it's four legs good, two legs bad. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's tariffs are a tax, period, end of story, full statement. You like your taxes, but you don't like those. Here's the difference. I'll tell you what. At least with tariffs, it gives us the opportunity to negotiate trade deals that improve the lives and wages of working Americans. Also, I think it's amazing that he doesn't even know the history of his own party, because up until the 80s, before the Democrats got co-opted by the corporate bureaucracy that dominates them today, Nancy Pelosi's stock pickers, you know, their evidence is everywhere, right? Same kind of movement that somehow turned all love, no war liberals into warmongers all of a sudden, right? But if he was being genuine at all, he would look at all of the, see, his taxes offer absolutely no benefit. It's confiscation from us to give to people that he determines are more deserving of those tax dollars. Nobody thinks, including Trump, and people will argue with me about this, but I am convinced it's pure negotiation on his side. Trump doesn't think tariffs are good for the economy. Trump needs to think everybody thinks he thinks it. So they trust the gun that he's holding, right? And so it's a negotiation tactic. Trump's a builder. He doesn't want he doesn't want building materials to go up. He understands it. I have to believe that he understands that. Okay, so that's the difference that good old Bob ain't leveling with the people with. Bob has no intention of ever scaling back his taxes. No. He wants to add an income tax. He wants to expand a capital gains tax because Bob thinks he can better spend your money than you do. The tariffs are a negotiating ploy to get the American people a better deal. Okay, so when I look at the fact that they were all fine, right? If you under Obama, what an amazing job he was doing. We saw the weakest economic recovery on history. Stock market went to record highs. You had record low wage growth forever, right? Did you hear them complain about that at all? No, Obama, he's healing the oceans. He's making the world a loving, embraceful place again, right? And it's just, it is so, like, it irritates me. I'm a man that's all about data. Okay, Bob, then why are you trying to delineate the difference of a tariff and a tax?
Yeah.
It is the exact same thing, except one actually can benefit the middle class and one cannot and will not. So, I mean, it's just a joke. And the guy's playing semantics. And I wish the voters of this state understood why he talks like that. He talks like that because he thinks you're too stupid to understand what he really says.
And he knows the media won't call him. That is the truth. And he knows the media, people are blinded by and often just totally contingent on what they hear in the press. And the media, by and large, will not call him out. The reporter in the room who asked him that actual question was with Center Square, which is one of the only like legitimate, unbiased, fair news organizations left in the state of Washington. But usually he can have those press conferences and totally get away with it, absolutely unscathed. And people will celebrate him for fighting back against Donald Trump while he picks their pockets. It's crazy. We won't let him get away with it, Zach. Never.
No.
Never.
No. Did you catch the one that really blew my mind the other day? And I'm going to, I don't really know what to make of it, but Cairo did a poll. Did you see the Cairo poll that came out regarding ICE?
No.
Okay, so Cairo did a poll saying, like, do you approve of ICE activities in our area? Okay.
Yeah.
78% of people responded yes.
Wow. And I don't know how scientific that poll is, but
I agree, and I doubt the veracity of it to some extent, but the fact it was a poll conducted by Cairo, right? Like, it's not like you and I are sitting there watching the Cairo Twitter feed on bated breath. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So, but it would be perfect in the state of Washington because they're one of the things that irritates me the most about this state and the politics there within is that the state really isn't anywhere near as liberal as it's perceived. You have a bunch of people that via ignorance and browbeating have just kind of come underneath that banner, right? And that's the other part of it where I look at the constituency in the state and I'm just like, talk about the proletariat, right? Like, educate yourself. Know what you're voting for. When you all say politicians are liars, that doesn't just mean the ones on the right side of the aisle, guys. And furthermore, a little civics note to people. Any area you live in that's been dominated for more than 20 years by one party, go look underneath the hood because it ain't going to look pretty, regardless of which party. And this party hasn't seen an R with an ability to do anything for 40 years in the state.
100%.
Right? So it's just disgusting.
Yeah, it's disgusting. There has to be more criticality, but that has to come from the media. Whenever I put responsibility, three prongs of it, right? I actually put the media first, then the voters, then politicians, because politicians are politicians. They're going to do what they can get away with. That's sort of the expectation. And the voters have to hold them accountable, but it's through the media and they're supposed to stand in the breach and they just don't. So media is the number one culprit. Speaking of the media, sometimes they do stuff right. Let's do some watchdogging. So there was a story from Como News, and I got to give Chris Daniels credit for this. So Como News in Seattle, but this is something you could apply nationally. So in 2020, and I covered, the takeover of Chaz Chop, the whole autonomous zone, the city of Seattle just started throwing tens of millions of dollars at these race and social justice causes and groups. And I thought at the time it was kind of a bribe to get them to stop burning the city down, right? It was like, we'll give you anything.
Totally.
But this was happening across the country after George Floyd, is you'd have these organizations getting hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in taxpayer funds to remake the criminal justice system and whatever the stuff. And I knew this would happen at the time. There was no oversight. There was no, I mean, Seattle had like hired a street czar, a former convicted pimp who was supposed to like help police work with the gangs, right? And after 6 months, they just ended the contract and the guy didn't do anything and nobody ever got in trouble for it. So now all this news is coming out about the fraud that was perpetrated in these programs from Como News. King County audit found potential multi-million dollar fraud in juvenile diversion programs. And, you know, of course, it's the one Republican King County council member who's like, yeah, this is bad. But the Democrats who supported it, I mean, is it really just about race, do you think? That it was like, oh, we can't be seen as putting like people of color and their contracts through a fine-tooth comb? Or do Democrats maybe just not care if we waste money?
I don't want to derail this conversation, but I will go I will go back to, I think it runs, I think the answers to that run far deeper than that. I'm reminded of an interview, and I would encourage everybody listening to this today to go look up this interview, because I believe it was conducted in either 82 or 84 with a guy by the name of Yuri Bezmenov, who was a KGB operative that defected to the United States. And he talked about that in the 60s, that the USSR, and he was a verified high up at the KGB, which is why we helped him defect in the 80s. So the guy's background's totally verifiable. But he was saying that we realized in the 60s that we were not going to be able to win a kinetic war with you guys, heads up, that we had to be subversive. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that we began targeting were educational systems, because we believed that you could have an entire culture retrained, culturally speaking, within 20 years, right? And he cites all the different historical examples, and it's an extensive, but everybody needs to go back and listen to the interview and realize that this interview was conducted by PBS in 1982, and listen to what he was saying, Russia's or the Soviet Union at that time, what their long-term goals, what their biggest stated goal was, since they knew that they could not compete with us heads up in a kinetic war, that by going after and infiltrating our academic institutions, that they could make us begin to believe that we were the problem, right? That the United States was the great evil, that they had to get us to hate ourselves, to turn against it and abandon the things that made this country great. The reason I bring that up is because if you don't look at it through that context, and if you don't know enough of these Cal-educated liberal Berkeley types, right, that think it's the highest form, it's erudite, to blame your own culture or your own country for something. You know, for instance, think of the terminology, the catchphrase, slavery built this country. Factually speaking, that's an idiotic statement. Settlers built the country, okay? Oh, you mean immigrants? No, immigrants are people that move to an existing ecosystem, right? That come and live off of a culture that has already been assembled. Yeah. Settlers are far different. There is no money, there is no economy, there are no stores, there are no roads. They're taking infinite risk. They get no benefit of government, right? So even that statement is a perfect example of how you have contorted history to fit your model, right? Did slaves make up an unacceptable amount of labor in this country? Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, but the truth matters. Did slaves build this country? That's a ridiculous statement. It's a ridiculous statement, okay? It's just not factually true. But so my point is, I think all of that has stemmed out of the educational system, and societally the way it works is if you're educated better than I am, if you've got more degrees, if you went to the Ivy League, then who am I to argue with
you? Yep.
Right? So, and if you don't look at it through that lens, none of it makes sense, because you're sitting there going, wait a second, you think the United States is a problem. We've done bad things, but boy, we've done a lot more good. Speaking of which, do you know who saved the Russian people from the worst famine in history? United States of America, circa 1922, right? And you go talk to these kids, they don't know those policies, right? How about the amount of American, how many kids know who John Brown is, right? American abolitionists that fought and died to free slaves, right? You don't know, like The United States of America wasn't this place. Bring your slaves. We love them. There was massive consternation internally from the very beginning. The other side of it, the Dutch are the ones that started the trade. I don't hear anybody talking about them. So if you look at it, and I think that's why that Yuri Bezmenov interview was so important to me, because you sit there and you go, how do these people have this mind virus that gets them to believe that all these things aren't true?
Yeah.
And to me, that's really the only answer.
Well, and I've heard of it as like called pathological altruism or suicidal empathy. And we're like trying to make up for past wrongs, which were wrong, by doing absolutely idiotic things. And, you know, I wonder, like, how bad does it have to be when race is involved? How bad does the behavior have to be called out by the left? And we always talk about Black Lives Matter, and it was a total fraud and scam. And the founder of Black Lives Matter, you know, had bought multi-million-dollar mansions, gave money to her brother for security and all this stuff. And still the left won't condemn Black Lives Matter as like a failed movement and a grift. So I just don't know if there's a level of, you know, is it $10 million? Is it $100 million? Is it $1 billion in fraud handed out to these entities that would finally get them to acknowledge, like, yeah, maybe we ought to put everything through a fine-tooth comb?
Yeah, it's moral relativism, right? Yeah. It's really what it is. It's moral relativism. There is no up, there is no down. And when we do that, then we've got this sole ability to arbitrarily define what, like, so think about how we're, like, just, you know, there's plenty of people in Seattle that would want to come after me for saying this, but think of how insane it is to say, I saw a tweet where it said, it showed an LGBTQ flag.
LGBTQ.
And it showed a Nazi.
What was that? Try that again.
LGBTQ, LMNOP, something. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, it gets it so
close.
Exhausting.
No, that was close. That was close.
Yeah. Latinx, right? I can't even keep track of the terms. But it's this moral relativism that really obfuscates and covers up so much of the, you know, the truth of these issues, and in my opinion gets people so far off the wrong track where they're asking all the wrong questions. Yeah. Right? It's all our fault. We're to blame. And you look around and go, guys, do you realize that no one has done more for the standard of living for people around the world, the United States? And that's a statement of fact. Doesn't mean that everything we've done is ever good. But here's another little tip. Look around the world. Every single country you see stole that land from somebody else at some point.
Correct.
So that's probably not a good way to go back historically and define morality.
Yeah.
Right. It's just that doesn't make a lot of sense.
And also, you know, giving $100 million or $1 billion to some group for racial justice, and then that group turns around and squanders it and defrauds people or keeps it to pad their pockets, that doesn't help the racial justice movement. That doesn't help other people of color. So you should actually be upset about that, even if you like the group or whatever it is. So it's just, none of it makes sense. All right, since we're kind of rebranding the show, you are a money manager. So I thought it would be helpful if maybe, you know, we end the show every week with some helpful, I know you can't give investing advice on the show, but end with some helpful advice for people on managing their own money, putting the government aside and managing their own money. So I want to talk about the lottery, okay? My husband loves buying his lotto tickets. And I'll admit, okay, I'm kind of trashy. I will not turn down a good scratcher. If somebody wants to buy me a scratcher, I'm scratching that thing. And I enjoy it.
I'm not going to turn down a scratch. I mean, are you kidding me? If you got a scratch, itch it, right?
Right.
I mean,
100%. There's nothing like, you know. So there was the big old Powerball. Was it the Powerball or the multi... Powerball.
Yeah.
Like $1 billion. Is there a point where even you as a money manager say, yeah, go ahead and buy a ticket. No big deal. No harm, no foul.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't think buying a ticket here or there is going to bankrupt anybody. Now, there is a thing that can be, and I've had the benefit, but also the unfortunate, because it's not fun to look at. There's a lot of these folks where it's a religion, right?
Yep.
And they're spending, you know, $50 a week or whatever. They've got their set amount, you know? I'm telling you, I know people like that, right? Every week.
That's a lot.
When you sit down and you look at that over a 40-year period of time, and you assign to it a 7-9% annualized compounded interest rate, there's a lot of folks out there that are going to be spending somewhere between $100,000 to $250,000 on lottery tickets.
Oh my gosh, I'm just looking at this. So,
when you look at that money per month,
oh, I was just doing the math on my calculator. Oh my God,
it's shocking. And what you also have to do then is assign that 7-9%, you know, gain that you're missing out on, right? Meaning, 7-9% is a very achievable long-term nominal rate of return.
Yes.
Meaning you can do that without taking excessive risk.
That's enough, right? To buy a vacation condo in Florida.
I know. So yeah, if you want to go buy a flyer every time Super Bowl crosses over, Powerball. Crosses over $1 billion, go do it. That's fine, yeah. Right? But when we start repetitiously, if that becomes a retirement plan for you, don't. Just get, it's just slower. You'll end up there, right? You've got like a legitimately much better shot of getting walking outside and getting hit by lightning.
Yeah.
But that's not a retirement philosophy. Here's the other thing, and everybody knows this, but it is the most empty win for anybody. It really is. It is. You and I have talked about this before. Money is overhyped by everybody, and everybody I know that has made a significant amount of it has come to the same conclusion. Either that or they're insufferable, right? Nobody wants to be around them.
Okay, I'm sorry. This was $1.79 billion with an $820 million takeaway.
No, that can make a difference.
How you overhype,
right?
That?
I'm just saying, what I'm saying is I guarantee you the person that wins it's going to die miserable.
You know, I do hear they do a series on like lottery stories, and like there have been people who've been murdered because of their lottery winnings. People blow through it in a matter of like 5-10 years and then they're destitute.
Yeah.
So you know, you've got
That's my point. We as human beings, like, money's a lot like food, right? You need a certain amount of it, and then if that becomes your only pursuit, it will become harmful at some point, right? And it's because it doesn't make you happy and it doesn't give you purpose. It really doesn't. I've said before, does it make things more convenient? Yes, a lot more convenient, right? But that's it. If you're looking to feel like a better person, if you're looking for people to like you more, they'll fake like they like you more, but they won't.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, it will not deliver to you all the, it just won't. And that's why there are so many cases of, go look at the suicide rate among lottery winners is like 5 times that of the regular population.
Man.
And yet everybody assumes that money's gonna make them happy.
Yeah.
What really happens is they finally get the thing that they thought made them happy, and in 6 months they're not. And so if you've been chasing this medicine that's a fix-all, right? That's a, what is that? A panacea, right?
Yep,
you've been after this economic panacea, and then you finally get it, and within 6 months you're depressed again. That's a depressing thing, right?
Yeah.
Like like my college football coach said it, and I've experienced it in my own life. If you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it.
Wow. Deep thoughts from Zach Abraham. Wow. You know, but that is true. I think people get in a habit of buying these lotto tickets. My husband certainly does. I mean, he's not spending $50 a week on lotto tickets. We'd have a problem with that. But gosh, when I looked at, because when I did that quick math, it was like $150,000. I mean, if you make a habit of that for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, that's problematic. So
yeah,
I don't know. All right. Good advice as always, Zach. We'll see you next week.
All right, ladies. Thanks for having me.